We're talking about digital privacy and security here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Connected devices have transformed our lives in countless ways, but they can also scoop up data on us. Privacy issues have plagued the world's largest social media network. For instance, Facebook failed to fend off a lawsuit over a data breach that affected nearly 30 million users. So how much do you trust tech companies with your private information? Should tech companies do more to protect our privacy, or does the responsibility fall to us users? How do you protect your data today, right now? What about your passwords? We're at 800-642-1234. Georgia Weedman is the founder of two security companies. Bulb Security is a consulting firm. Shavira focuses on mobile security products. She also wrote a book called Penetration Testing, A Hands-On Introduction to Hacking. Georgia, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, you live and breathe this stuff, this digital privacy and security. And let's start broadly here. What are some of the most common mistakes that people make who are not immersed in the ins and outs of digital privacy?
Well, I think the most important thing that people miss is passwords. We have so many. You know, we have one for Facebook. We have one for LinkedIn. We have one for our computer, our phone. All these accounts, and let's face it, we're supposed to have a long password that's not based on a dictionary word, but we as people cannot remember like 5 million long passwords. So we're often, let's admit it, even I do it, using passwords over again in different sites. And I think, you know, if one of those sites gets hit by a breach, then it could migrate to all your other sites. So I think that's something that people, including myself, should take much more seriously than they do.
Yeah, so you even have difficulty forcing yourself to change your passwords, make them stronger, and really keep track of all that. So where do you start? How do you do that?
Well, I think the best thing to do is use a password manager, or if you have Apple devices, you can use like the Apple keychain that's built in. So instead of you having to remember it, which let's face it is impossible for most people, you can have the password manager like automatically fill in your password for you. I mean, it's not 100% foolproof. Like if someone gets full access to your phone, they can still get access to it, but it's a lot better than having a, you know, password one as your password.
Yeah. And so with passwords, some people go, as you mentioned, for these really long and complex phrases, or they're even been called passphrase, which is a long password that's almost like a sentence. So what is the best practice for creating a password?
Well, there's actually, for those of you who are familiar with the XKCD cartoons, he actually did one that was really great. So look up XKCD and passwords. But the general thing is, like what I like to do is if I take like a song lyric or a line from a poem that I really like, and I grab like the first letter of each word in it and, you know, turn some into dollar signs and whatnot. You know, that's not based on a dictionary word. Someone would have to, you know, well, now everybody knows. So, but in general, that's going to make a lot stronger password than, you know, even if I wrote out the whole phrase.
Well, thinking about all the places that we have personal information, that can be really daunting. So where do we start to find out where we're leaving this trail? How do we assess our own risk when it comes to digital security?
You know, that's a really good question. That is something that I think the security world really needs to do more for consumers. I mean, you can change your Facebook privacy settings. You can use private browsing. But, I mean, you really don't know where the data is going once they have it. Like, even if starting today you use private browsing all the time, there's already a database of you in all these different sites. And, you know, I like to say that if you're not paying for the service, then you are the product. So like for Facebook or Google, your data is, you know, what they sell for ads. So, you know, they're definitely sharing it with people. You know, we saw the lawsuit with Facebook. It's scary out there.
Georgia, explain for us what is private browsing, how it works.
Well, private browsing, most of your browsers will have that built in. You know, if you use Firefox or Chrome or Safari or any of those, it'll have it. So basically what that does is it stops you from being tracked. So there's this thing called a cookie that, I don't know why they call it a cookie, but you know, every website pretty much like gives you a cookie and they use that to track you. And that's how like there's ads, you know, you'll get like an email from somebody where you're talking about, you know, we're going to go to the beach, and then you get swimsuit ads on Facebook. So that's like how they track you. And yeah, that gets you better ads, but you know, they have all that information. So private browsing will block that. So they're not able to get all that information about you. And all you have to do is, you know, go up, it's browser specific where you have to go, but you know, Google it. And now Google knows that you're doing private browsing, but
it's a never ending story there. Georgia Weedman is a digital security consultant and a hacking expert. What are your questions about how to make your online life more secure, more private? We have a digital security expert here who can answer your questions about privacy and safety online. Join in at 800-642-1234. Have you or someone you know ever been hacked? What happened? You can call in, email ideas at WPR.org. Let's take a call now with Joel joining us from Lansing, Iowa. Hi, Joel.
Hey, good morning. I've been an IT systems and network engineer for 28 years. I'd like to address some of the things and techniques that I use on the Android system. I've been involved with telephony, safety, and security for a long time, way back to when BlackBerry was number one.
you're showing your age. Carry
well,
on.
I can talk punch cards, too, but we don't want to do that. Back to the Black... I'll start at the BlackBerry, and then we'll move forward to Android quickly. BlackBerry in the 90s was a very secure system because everything that BlackBerry did went through BlackBerry's proprietary services in Toronto. And it was all encrypted and secure, and it was pumped back to you through Toronto. Whatever you did went through their systems in Toronto. Now, when it comes to Android, things I found in new Android 9, and I have a Galaxy S8 Plus, and it just recently updated to Android 9. It actually has its own blocking tool that says, this kind of looked like a junk call. Do you want to block it? And you say yes, and it's gone.
Hmm.
And it does the same thing with SMS messaging that you can report it as spam, and they're gone. And that's just a feature of OS 9. So when you're looking at telephones, I don't know what the Apple site does, but...
And Joel, yeah, we're losing you here, but I want to pause right there as we get back to the conversation on Android security tools and tricks, so much other security issues we're looking at with Georgia Weedman, digital security consultant and a hacking expert. She stays with us. Are you on social media? Have you ever used FaceTime? How concerned are you that someone might have been eavesdropping? Are you concerned about the ads that pop up for you on social media? How big of a problem is digital privacy in your world? Join in at 800-642-1234. We'll be back in just a minute. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. It is All Questions Asked and Hopefully Answered on Digital Privacy and Security. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So when your privacy is violated, what real choices do you have? What policies do you think could help protect user data that could come from the government? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Georgia Weedman is our guide. She founded two companies that focus on digital security, and she wrote a book on hacking. Georgia, before the last break, we took a call on Android security. What are you watching for there when it comes to security, specifically with Android devices?
Well, Android has come a long way. When Android first started, you know, it was really behind the iPhone in terms of security, but they've really ramped it up. It's a lot harder, you know, for an attacker to take over an Android than it was. And, you know, as the caller mentioned, you know, the devices themselves are either putting it in their operating system or partnering with like mobile security companies to, you know, have filters for spam calls, because we're getting a lot of spam calls. We're getting a lot of spam SMSs that could lead to, you know, a social engineering attack or you being tricked, you know, into downloading something or, you know, opening a website or giving up your credentials. And, you know, it's really good to have, you know, a filter that will catch some of that at least.
Are these type of filters and tools for the user, is that happening across the spectrum of phone operating systems, or is it really kind of proprietary out there?
It is, as far as I know, proprietary. I mean, Android has put it in their operating system, as the caller mentioned, but there are like tools. If you get, you know, a mobile antivirus or a mobile threat defense, they call it now, you get one of these tools, it will do that for you. So you as the user or your company should be, you know, if you have mobile devices in your company, they should definitely have something like that to take care of you to some extent.
Well, let's look at facial recognition technology that scans people's faces for the purpose of identifying them. And we've seen some movement on Capitol Hill for a push for bipartisan legislation on facial recognition technology. Where are you seeing this type of software and how it is interacting, in different states and for different companies out there?
Well, I think the big news right now is that, you know, the immigration ICE is using like the driver's license database and like going through it and doing facial recognition, looking for illegal immigrants, and, you know, the privacy invasion there versus like, I guess there's a law that says the DMV has to comply with law enforcement, which is how they got it. So I know there's been a lot of privacy pushback on that. Our phones are using our face or our fingerprint. I mean, we've seen instances of, you know, people under duress, you know, will open it with their face, or even if, you know, they're dead, their fingerprint still works. So, you know, it's not a perfect system, and it's another way for us to be tracked. I mean, now if the cameras are recognizing our face, they see us everywhere. So, and it's not a perfect system. You know, it doesn't see women, young people, and, you know, basically anybody who's not white. That's the white male is what they used as the original face for testing. So, you know, it has a much, you know, higher number of false positives for anybody who's not.
Do you see the use of facial recognition software spreading, or should it be more regulated? What type of regulation do you see down the pipeline?
Well, I definitely see it. It is going to spread, but I do think there should be legislation on it. I do think that, you know, we do have some right to privacy, even though, you know, in our digital world, it's hard to say that we have any, but, you know, I think that there should be some regulation on it that, you know, anybody can't just, you know, put up a camera somewhere and be facial recognizing, or this, you know, the DMV thing, you know, it's technically it's legal, but it's not very nice. So I think there should be some more regulation on it.
We're talking with Georgia Weedman. She is a digital security consultant, hacking expert. We're spending the hour talking about online privacy. How do you deal with your passwords? Do you set a reminder to change them regularly, or do you find yourself using variations on the same password for many different websites? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Seth now, joining us from Janesville. Hi, Seth.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Just a minute.
Oh, dear. Seth, can you hear us?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to chime in. I was a security major. I remember one exercise we did was we actually looked at the ways that hackers use to crack a password and figure out what it is. And one of the things we determined was the length of the password is actually more important than the complexity. So if you were to take a very long password, like a sentence, and it provided sufficiently long, it's actually going to be more secure than something short with a lot of symbols in it. So that at least helps me to remember those things. You know, I can just remember it as a sentence, and it just makes it easier to manage when you have all these websites you have different passwords for.
Seth, thank you so much. And Georgia, you wrote a book on hacking. How do you crack those codes?
Well, usually passwords, hopefully, when they're stored in a database, are encrypted. We've seen instances where they're not, and then, you know, you just have them, but usually they're encrypted. And basically what you do is you know the encryption algorithm, and you take a word and you encrypt it with the same encryption algorithm and compare it to, you know, the password you're trying to crack. And you do this over and over and over again. Computers are fast. They can do many of these per second. And eventually, hopefully, your word list will match up with what the password is.
Seth, do you find yourself changing your passwords a lot, or do you get kind of passive on that?
I would say I'm pretty passive on it. I do check if your information's been leaked. So if I see an alert come up, I'll usually change my password. But yeah, until then, they tend to remain the same.
Thanks so much for the call. So Seth kind of gets a reminder when he sees a big password breach or some type of breach in the media there. Let's take another call now with Don joining us from Lake Geneva. Hi, Don.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
I am inquiring, in the past, ISPs providing internet services for businesses and homes pretty much left the consumers wide open. And I'm curious to see if there's any updates on, one, how ISPs might be responsible for protecting their customers, and two, what's going on in some of the collection of data that you've mentioned for, you know, Facebook and for ads and things like that. What protections are out there right now, how they've changed, because there doesn't seem to be a lot of news other than, you know, big takeovers with ISPs.
Don, thanks for the call. Georgia, what do we see out of internet service providers?
Well, they're definitely someone who should be in the conversation more than they are. You know, as Don mentioned, you know, it's if there is a malicious site out there or, you know, being used for hacking people, you know, the best way to get it taken down, really the only way to get it taken down, is to get the internet service provider to, you know, work with you to do so. And, you know, if they're not receptive to it, then, you know, you can't really do much. And I think that they really should be involved in the conversation more for that. There should be regulations that, you know, they have to, you know, work with security people.
Can you explain for us what are social engineering attacks and how they relate to digital privacy?
Well, a social engineering attack, you've all probably, you know, had one in your life, even if it was, you know, your kids trying to convince you to, like, buy something for them. So basically, you know, someone calls you or someone walks up to you or someone sends you an email and, you know, they're trying to convince you to do something. You've probably all seen, like, the, you know, African prince who has all this money and just needs your banking information and they'll, like, give you millions of dollars. That's an example of a not very good social engineering attack, but unfortunately that works with some people. But they get more sophisticated. And what I'm really seeing is people are starting to learn through, you know, the media and security awareness training that, you know, don't click on links in emails if it looks weird, or, you know, don't respond to these phone calls that say, you know, the IRS has suspended your social security number. But now we're seeing a lot of, like, text messages on, like, Facebook Messenger, WhatsApp, Twitter, anywhere that people can talk to you. And I don't think people are realizing that, you know, that's the same thing as the email from the, you know, Nigerian prince. It's just in a different form. So I don't think people are really making the connection that if you get a weird link on WhatsApp from somebody that, you know, it could also be something that attacks you. So, you know, they try to get your credentials for a website, a bank, or they, you know, try to attack your browser. If you open a website, they try to get you to download something malicious that takes over your computer, but pretends to be like a game. Hmm. So it's all about, you know, taking over this stuff.
We're learning about digital privacy with Georgia Weedman. She founded two companies focusing on digital security, and she wrote a book on hacking. She stays with us. Have you or someone you loved ever dealt with someone trying to get your personal information online? What happened? How did you deal with it? Share your story at 800-642-1234. We'll continue this on digital security and privacy right after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're working through tech privacy issues this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Marriott says it's will fight being fined $123 million by the UK government. It's related to that massive data breach last year. Marriott announced that data from as many as 500 million guests at its Starwood hotels had been compromised. So how much do you trust tech companies with your private information? What does privacy mean to you? Should the government do more to regulate digital privacy, or do you worry that that intervention would stifle innovation in the tech world? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Georgia Weedman is a digital security consultant, and she stays with us. Let's go back to the phones now with Kendra joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Kendra.
Hi there. I was calling to actually mention Marriott, and there was another company that also got fined approximately $150 million. And my first comment is, we don't do that in this country, not with any regularity. Equifax, that released all kinds of data, not just credit cards, but social security numbers and all other kinds of data of millions of people, and they're still allowed to have their hands in our private data. You know, whatever fine they got was probably not enough. And the security system that they were using, I have friends who run computer systems, they're system administrators, all of them knew that that was not a safe way to store the data at Equifax.
Kendra, let's have Georgia jump in here on data breaches. Do we do enough to punish these companies when they have these breaches?
We absolutely do not. So many people do not take security seriously, and that's what leads to a lot of these breaches. A lot of the time, it's something that really could have been prevented. You know, better storage with encryption, updating things, passwords, you know, the same things we deal with, you know, with their computers. And a lot of people are like, well, it doesn't matter if we have a breach. You know, they see that these companies are still around, you know, nothing happened, and they buy the cyber insurance. And it's like, well, if it happens, and the cyber insurance will pay. And I think, you know, the cyber insurance really needs to, you know, put their foot down and say, we're not paying if you were negligent. You know, if you had password as your password, or you didn't update your website, or you're storing passwords in plain text, like, we're not paying, you were negligent. There has to be like something that makes people take this seriously.
Let's go to Travis now in Waukesha. Hi, Travis.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What's on your mind?
Hey. Yeah, so I actually do information technology for a living, and I'm actually a systems administrator. So it's funny that your last caller kind of mentioned that. So just, I guess, my two cents about it. The first thing is, a lot of people don't realize that, like, you are the target, and you are the reason as a person why companies get attacked. Because most attacks now, I would say 80% of the attacks, and I'm just throwing that number out because I don't know the actual statistics, maybe your expert does, but most attacks don't happen because someone is hacking into a database like you see on, you know, in Hollywood or something like that. It's usually something like you heard, like an easy password, and that person that had that easy password of password has access to troves and troves of data, whereas if they only had access to what they needed to have access to, it could have saved that breach.
Hmm. Travis, thanks so much. How long have you worked in IT?
Actually, I've been working for about 7 or 8 years now, ever since I actually got out of high school. I've just kind of been really good at it. And lucky for me, I've fallen in the right hands, and now I'm actually a systems administrator for the job I work at.
How have you seen privacy issues in your world change over these years?
Honestly, it's been night and day when it really comes down to it, because, you know, 10 years ago, it was actually hacking. Like, people were just brute forcing passwords. And a brute force is when you just continuously guess over and over and over and over and over and over until you get it right. But now you see more of the social engineering side of things. Like, you see phishing, which is when they put up a fake page hoping you'll put your information into it. And you're basically just giving someone your information because you think you're logging into a secure website or a secure page. So, you know, over the years, it's came from just being technologically savvy and guessing passwords to now there's safeguards in place for that. So instead, they decide to trick you when you're the weakest link out of pretty much any security measure that a company could have.
So, Georgia, it sounds like hacking has changed over the years, and then IT has to be one step ahead of all of this.
Absolutely. I mean, as you know, the caller mentioned Hollywood, and you know, you see on TV like hackers running around with a cell tower, like doing this dark magic. But you know, as he mentioned, basically like nation states maybe do that, but you know, most of the breaches are, you know, they didn't update, they have a bad password, or you know, like he mentioned, social engineering or phishing, another name for it. And, you know, you put up a fake like Marriott page and send them an email, hey, sign into your Marriott rewards for blah, blah, blah. And it looks like the right site, but it's actually not. And you give up your credentials. So it's not really, you don't have to be like super technical to pull this off. I mean, a lot of the people that are, you know, doing this for, you know, a living as bad guys, they're not like super technically savvy. They just send out these social engineering attacks and it works.
Let's bring in Olegario in Madison. Hi, Olegario.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I had a simple question for your guest. I know there is those apps that claim or offer services, like, for example, Keeper Security, that they claim to manage all of your passwords. I've also been in the IT industry for the past 20 years doing software engineering, and we have many clients, and we don't really offer them like where to go or how to maintain their passwords. But since I was listening to the conversation, I thought I would ask to see if that's recommended or not, those applications.
Olegario, thanks for the call. You know, what about password security and perhaps two-factor authentication?
Well, two-factor authentication, hopefully a lot of you listening have it. And that's, you know, you put in your username and password, but that's not enough. You have to get like a one-time code that goes to your text messages or email, and you have to have that as well. So just having the username and password isn't enough. You might be saying that that's not, you know, perfect security. You can think of ways that people would be able to bypass that. They could get access to your email. You know, if you use the same password on your email, they've got that too, so they can grab the code. Or, you know, if they hack your phone or do an attack, it's called SIM swapping. They basically social engineer the carriers. They call and pretend to be you and say, you know, I've lost my phone, I have a new SIM card, can you put my number on this one? And, you know, sometimes they fall for it and then they can get the text message. So two-factor isn't perfect, but it is, you know, another line of defense. Definitely we should look at security as nothing is perfect, but we should do all that we can. So I do recommend two-factor.
We're talking with Georgia Weedman. She's a digital security consultant and a hacking expert. We're looking at digital privacy and the issues involved. Let's go to Erica now in Green Bay. Hi, Erica.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm curious. I think there's another tactic out there that I haven't heard a lot of people talk about. And frankly, it's sort of embarrassing. I've on two levels. One, texting. Almost on a weekly basis, I get a text And it's to me and a bunch of other numbers saying, my name is so-and-so, I live on your street, do you want to hook up? And then a bunch of really obscene language. And I just delete it. And then I also get emails where, this has happened twice now, where somebody says, I'm going to kill you if you don't stop sending nude pictures of yourself. Mm. And I can guarantee you, I've never delved into anything like that online. And so I just wonder if they think if I'm scared enough, I'm going to open up the email and that's how they'll get into my account.
Erica, thank you so much for putting that out there. What do we know about these sexually explicit text messages and emails, Georgia?
Well, you know, it's a big industry out there, you know, revenge porn, or, you know, putting somebody's face into, you know, pornographic image, you know, with artificial intelligence. You know, that's a big business, unfortunately. So, you know, I think, you know, that's another social engineering tactic. I think people are hearing stuff about, you know, nude pictures showing up online in the media. And, you know, that might, you know, be something that really, you know, gets their attention. So, you know, it's another social engineering attack that, you know, might work. You know, you probably won't give them nudes, but you might try to talk them into not killing you. And, you know, by talking to them, you may give up information or you may click on a link and end up somewhere bad or download something.
So there's really nothing more that Erica could do to lessen the number of these attacks on her that she's getting in this phishing sort of way.
Well, what she could do is, you know, a lot of sites ask for your phone number and, you know, that's information that's being sold. So what you could do is like set up a VoIP number or like Google Voice or something that goes through the computer and it's not your actual phone number. So, you know, all that stuff, not all of it, but a lot of it will come to that number instead of your actual real phone, which, you know, only your friends and family would have.
Can she also report any of this anywhere or any of these phishing schemes? Is there any reporting out there?
Not really. If you work for a company that has, you know, a security department, you can give it to them. If, you know, your phone gets something bad, but I mean, there's not really like, you know, a national board of anti-phishing as far as I know, and there really should be. Because it's a really big problem.
We're talking about data privacy in our interconnected world and what we can do to personally guard against data hacks. Georgia Weedman is a digital security consultant. She is a hacking expert, and she stays with us to answer your questions. What do you do to protect your privacy online? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. We're talking all things data privacy and security here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Chipmaker Intel calls this time that we're living in the big data bang. The Internet of Things is exploding around us. It's made up of billions of smart devices, from minuscule chips to mammoth machines. And by next year, it's projected that there will be around 26 smart objects for every person on our planet. So how many smart devices do you rely on? Have you ever dealt with a data breach or lost items because your data wasn't backed up? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. Georgia Weedman is a digital security consultant and a hacking expert, and she stays with us. Let's go back to the phones now with Tim joining us from Eau Claire. Hi, Tim.
Hi. I have a thing that me and my dad do. I help him out with a lot of his taxes, stuff like that, things that would have sensitive information. And what we developed is I give him a password. So I'll call him up and say, hey, Dad, Philadelphia. That's obviously not our password. I wouldn't give it out over the radio. And then he knows that I'm going to be asking for sensitive information. This actually saved him a while back. Somebody called up. They had spoofed my phone number. So they were calling from my phone number and asked him for his social security number and birth date for some forms for work. And he said, that's fine. What's the password? And hung up.
Oh, my goodness. So, Tim, you even have to take steps with your own father to make sure that he knows it is you.
Yeah, and he knows that if he ever gets a phone call saying that any of his children are in trouble, that he asks for whatever the password is so that he knows what the password is before he even thinks about sending money to try and help them out.
Georgia, what do you think of this kind of setup in Tim's family?
Yeah, that's really good. It's kind of a two-factor authentication. That's really good. That's actually what a lot of the cell phone providers are doing to stop, like, the SIM switching that we talked about, you know, somebody taking over your phone number. They ask you for a password. Not just having information about the person is not enough. You know, you put a passcode on your account. If the hacker doesn't know it, then it doesn't work. So that's definitely a good idea.
Tim, thanks so much for sharing that. Let's go to Mike now, joining us from Madison. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. Mike, quick question for your guest is, we always hear about people hacking huge corporations, now entire cities, as well as regular average citizens. What we never hear is about anybody getting caught or prosecuted for these hacking crimes. I was wondering if your guest could bring up anyone besides Edward Snowden, who had to go into hiding for his hacking stuff. But besides him, who have we prosecuted? Who is getting caught for this? It doesn't seem like anybody, that there's anything actually being done other than telling people to change your password.
Can we trace who is doing the hacking, and is it coming from other countries, Georgia?
Well, definitely it's coming from other countries, and definitely there's a lot of people we're not catching. You know, doing digital forensics and catching people is, you know, something that one is really hard, and we definitely need more of a push on. There are other people who have been caught, actually a member of the hacking community, MalwareTech, or Marcus Hutchinson is his real name. He's actually from England, but came to DEF CON, the big hacking conference in Las Vegas, a couple years ago, and was, you know, picked up by the FBI there. He's pled guilty, but, you know, I don't know. I don't know the details of the case, but I mean, they are catching some people. You know, they said he wrote like a banking Trojan that was, you know, stealing people's money from banks, getting the credentials. So some people are getting caught, but not nearly enough.
Well, let's go to Vern now in Boyd. Hi, Vern.
Oh, hi. Thanks for letting me on. There's two issues. They involve the same thing. Okay, when you try to get, you know, rent the house or whatever, they want your social security number. So the caretaker gets it. She could write it down, and then they give it to the landlord or the company that owns the apartments. And then they also have the VA. They have no password. If they know your social security number, they can access your VA account, just like that. There's no password that you can put on your VA system. So they should not be allowed to use these social security numbers for all this. You know, if you want to do a credit check or somebody check with the people they pay their bills to, quit going to these national credit companies, whatever. Because nobody can secure these. They're getting so good with these supercomputers, they can hack almost anything.
Vern, thanks so much for the call. Georgia, how careful do we need to be with our social security numbers? You know, how do we handle that?
Well, unfortunately, you know, as the caller mentioned, like to rent an apartment, to get a loan for a car, like to get a job, you have to give up your social security number, and it's, you know, possibly stored somewhere. So, I mean, I don't think we're going to get to the point where we're not sharing it unless there's, you know, another way to run like background checks on people in the future. But the real problem there is, you know, he mentioned that the VA system uses, instead of a password that somebody made up that's hopefully strong, it's their social security number. So if somebody knows that, they can get in. The real problem is that nobody, and it happens to me too, actually my insurance company did it. That was my password, was my social security number. And it happens a lot, but those companies need to up their security and realize they don't need to do that. That information can be gotten pretty easily from all the people that have it. It just takes one who's malicious or, you know, it gets stolen.
Georgia, as we talk about digital privacy and so many issues out there, if we could take one personal step today to improve our security online, what would you recommend that be?
to improve your security online, I would definitely say that, you know, using a password manager or you know, some other system so you do have strong and different passwords on all your sites would be, you know, the most important thing. I realize it's difficult, you know, for us as people, but I think that would be the biggest thing because somebody gets hacked on one site and it just goes everywhere because they use the same password, then get onto so many more sites and get so much more from you. So, you know, I think that's the most important thing.
How important is it to update software when you're asked to do that?
Oh, that is very, very important. I mean, if your software is updating, a lot of the times it's adding security updates as well as new features. So like if a way to hack, say, the iPhone is found and Apple updates to make it so that doesn't work anymore. Like, you know, we saw the FaceTime bug where people could, you know, eavesdrop on you on FaceTime. And, you know, Apple very quickly updated FaceTime and they actually did a really good job and shut down FaceTime for anybody that hadn't updated. But most people don't do that. Most people, you know, you can still, you know, run your browser even if it's really out of date, but then people may be able to attack it and it won't be hard. You know, there's databases online and places on the internet that you can find like scripts that run code that runs out of the box. All they have to do is run it. They don't have to be smart. And, you know, so updating is really, really important.
So in terms of responsibility, where does it come down? How much of it is the responsibility of these big tech companies like Amazon and Google and Apple to help us make our lives more secure and versus what we should take on as everyday consumers of this software and technology?
I absolutely think that the big companies, you know, that have all our data are, you know, responsible. Like we saw with Facebook, you know, they have that data. They have definitely need to be taking security super seriously, like, you know, as seriously as they possibly could, spend all that money that they have on making things secure. It won't be 100% secure. It may get hacked still, but, you know, if they're not doing, you know, the basics, they really need to get super fined. And, but we as users, you know, we need to also take security into our own hands, realize that it is possible that these providers might get hacked. So using the different passwords that are strong, updating our software, things like that, you know, being aware of social engineering attacks that you might see. I mean, those are things that can really help us stay secure. So, you know, it definitely the providers should keep us safe, but we must realize that they may not and take our security into our own hands.
Georgia, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I could talk about this all day.
Georgia Weedman is founder and CEO of the security consulting firm Bulb Security, founder of Shavira, which focuses on mobile products as well, and author of a book on hacking. Just ahead, how is it that a multimillionaire got a sweetheart deal for sex crimes? New charges are bringing up old questions about Jeffrey Epstein and about prosecutors in that case, one of whom was Department of the Labor Secretary. On Point looks at sex trafficking charges against Epstein. That's just ahead. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.